Welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. So today I'm joined by Dan Yarmolak, and he's an industrial IoT professional, a full stack technology solution provider from hardware through to cloud AI and API integration into work order systems. He's an adjunct professor in data science and software engineering. And we've done a couple of podcasts before, and today we're actually going to be talking about cloud and getting higher, or in fact deeper, in the cloud. So yeah, it's quite a amazing place that we are faced with now, Dan. What's your sort of take on the situation with the cloud right now?
Well, Nate, it's great to be here. I think we're finding that, you know, the world is migrating to the cloud, but you know, there's still way more runway to go. According to this new study by McKinsey, we start seeing that most companies are only about 20 to 25% of their way into their cloud journeys. So there's a lot of more work to be done, and it's exciting, yet it's difficult. So a lot of people are reckoning with all these different changing tools and tool sets, and they have to mind the store, meaning regular business. At the same time, they don't want to miss the future. So we're kind of reckoning with this transition, you know, to an agile development kind of sandbox.
Right. So when you talk about the agile development sandbox, you're talking about, you know, very safely controlled experiments with new solutions. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that is fair to say. These can be sandboxes, which is cordoned off, you know, safely away from existing workloads. And what we're really trying to get through is get to this point of rapid iteration and innovation, and wanting to be able to experiment like en masse in a way that is quick, and you can test those use cases out in the environment. So it allows that. Otherwise, it was the old world of servers and spinning up things and looking at databases in a static environment as opposed to an online kind of dynamic environment.
Okay. And, you know, from this McKinsey study, it says here that they're only sort of 20% of the people are into the cloud journey. So that equates to like 80% of workloads still being on premise. That's kind of risky, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. I mean, if we have to move fast, and you have to be able to look at the way people are digesting media today or information, and the amount of big data being it just keeps growing and growing, and you know, you can't just kind of continue to do things on premise in a rapid format. So, and also those servers or server racks just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So if you're a small or medium sized company, it kind of becomes a ball and chain on you at a certain point. So there is a lot more to do. I don't think it's completely off base to go, okay, there's a lot more to do, but quite a bit has been done. And so people should not say like they're behind the eight ball, but there's still many more workloads to do. We just have to find the right architectures to kind of be able to deal with these things and lift and shift these in the right way such that it doesn't compromise continuous business.
Right. So when you say the right architectures, are you actually talking about the security, the scalability, the speed of the processors? What are you actually referring to when you talk about architecture
here? Well, the way, you know, now I'm not a senior architect or cloud professional on my day-to-day, but we've had to leverage it in various ways, and it was very interesting for us. Mm-hmm. And I mean my day job and in the industrial IoT environment and our platform and our solution.
Okay.
you know, there's some best practice architectural principles, which is kind of building decoupled systems. You know, we want to kind of separate storage from the compute and process stuff. And newer technologies will replace the old ones. And this kind of decoupled or modular approach allows that risk mitigation, you know, because you're able to be agile. Yeah. And compute and the storage are separate. So if something does change, now, a lot of my contacts in that are high level in technology says that we're always going to be on the precipice of bridge technologies, always migrating and changing what can be more efficient, faster, cost effective. And if you think of it like that, and we're always changing, we have to kind of have these little unique workloads that we can kind of like appetizers, something we can just put it on the plate. The plate might shift, the appetizer might, but this kind of flow and orchestration, we're just trying to break down that process so that it doesn't slow us up in the future.
Right. And being slowed up in the future could be down to the lack of skills within the vendors. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the real, you know, we often hear about the lack of data scientists, you know, people being able to do data-driven kind of analytics, machine learning, artificial intelligence, visualization, et cetera. But, you know, there's a lot of other skill sets too that are still very high in demand. If they're not a data scientist, software engineers, firmware engineers, things like that, that are all in the guts of how to make these connected solutions work. So there is a lack of skills. And this is why we've seen a lot of the cloud providers, they're really storage guys, you know, the cloud providers. They really want storage at the end of the day, but to facilitate that kind of storage, they have to create toolboxes, codeless code, API ecosystems, such that the partners or subject matter experts or vertical guys that work with these cloud providers are able to rapidly iterate, because they don't have all those software engineering kind of, that wasn't their traditional bailiwick. You know, they were building pumps, they were building fans, they were building motors, and all of a sudden, you know, they're being forced in a digital environment to kind of work there. But that's not historically where what they're good at, and they can't scale up, and it could be a road to nowhere just adding more and more software guys if you don't have the right problem to solve. So it's kind of, the industry has created tool sets for people to experiment.
Right. And when you're talking about tool sets, you're talking about what, like AI and, for example, you know, chatbots and this kind of software and what else? Let me see. I'm just thinking. What's it called? Language processing, natural language processing, image recognition. What things is that, the sort of stuff that you're talking about here?
Right. I mean, those are some of the things. I mean, you know, from a cloud perspective, you want to kind of containerize these workloads, and there's this containerization, or Kubernetes is very popular. Mm-hmm. Think about blockchain. You know, you want to create this kind of secure business transaction network. When you talk about data, it is now object storage, you know, because things are changing. Voice data, image data, in a big data environment. And then AI is all these kind of different machine learning type of tools, which can be chatbots. It can be, like you said, natural language processing or image recognition. But, you know, I watched a colleague of mine who's like 52, who was a kind of a coder 20, 30 years ago, but became a line manager and a business guy. So a technical engineer that.
Sorry, Dan, I'm going to have to interrupt you there. What were you saying about chatbots? I didn't catch that. We had a sort of problem with a connection for some reason.
Well, chatbots, you know, are popular today. But there's a lot of, you know, if we were to have done that 10 years ago, that would have been very, very manual software coding and rules-based kind of engine, where it would have like 10,000 different rules. If this and that, if this, this.
Yep.
If that, then communicate with point C.
Mm-hmm.
But now the way the framework's set up, you can build a chat bot. I've seen it at an IBM convention where my colleague who's 52 built it, and the thing was build a chat bot in 15 minutes. And sure enough, he did. However simplistic, it's starting to show that you do not have to have this tremendous acumen to do some kind of meaningful development, or at least be on the path to that, you know?
Yeah. I get you. So is it, so the big data, when you said to me, big data is like necessitating the new architectural solutions in the cloud or the unique workload, what do you mean by that in relation to what you just said?
Well, you've heard these statements that, you know, like more data has been generated in the last year than the history of humanity. That's mm-hmm. how much data is being generated, mostly by the proliferation of mobile phones, mobile usage.
Yeah.
But also, you know, we're getting into this world where by 2025, they're saying how many tens of billions of devices will be connected. Mm-hmm. So that means in my industrial sphere, we think of our mobile phone, but we humans go to sleep. We can shut the phone off. But think of machines. They're going to continuously talk all the time and be communicating small bits of data. Mm-hmm. So when you think of this massive amount of data, whether it be numbers or you know, simplistic kind of text data, it's still growing at an astronomical rate. So you can't just keep, you know, adding servers or on-premise stuff to that kind of tsunami of data coming at you.
Right.
Drowning in data yet starving in information is a popular term. So we have to find a different mechanism to kind of hold all this stuff, and because we want the data to kind of mine unique insights. At the same time, we can't just be so worried about security that we do it on-prem, or that was the traditional way of doing it, so we do it on-prem. It's just you can't keep scaling up to keep up with that growth in certain industries. So we have to go to the cloud to be able to take that volume of information.
Yeah. IBM has made available to the developer community an offer with $12,000 worth of cloud credits. And if you'd like to pick that up, you go to www.influentialvisions.com/IBM cloud credits, and you can grab that there. So let's get back to the show. Cheers. So that basically comes back to the containerization of the cloud and actually being able to run something 24/7, knowing that if, you know, for example, one of those cloud containers is attacked or has a problem, that you can just replicate what that data was and run in the cloud effectively with no downtime, right?
That's correct. Yeah, you can have redundancy and save those instances and not be as harmed as if it was on-prem and it attacked your kind of internal thing. And many industries are trying to kind of have a hybrid strategy mm-hmm. because they have big security concerns. You can think of a utility, you know, we hear about nefarious means trying to get in and control these things, and their secure and command and control has always been like that. At the same time, they're realizing that this volume of information, or if they're going to retrofit and connect their kind of machines in the utility, it necessitates a different approach. So there can be hybrid solutions. But in addition to just hybrid solutions being multi-cloud or private cloud, public cloud or multi-vendor, also what another phenomenon that's hitting this area is this open source area where, you know, the community is kind of driving best in class software kind of environments. And it's different than proprietary software because it's meant to integrate. It's meant to work. It's meant to be malleable and modular. And that is why some of the best software development minds look at open architectures that are open and true. What they mean by open source is that you can see the code and it's not a black box. So you hear about things like algorithms, there's biases in them. Mm-hmm. Also in software environments, people want to know what's making this machine go. what makes it drive from this to that. And that kind of transparency builds trust and allows the community to also participate in the code and augment it for their use cases in these open source models. And that is just the way the world's going. It's going open source. It's almost going to the point that it's free. People participate it, make it better. And it becomes a dominant kind of choice. And the commercialization models come in services around that, you know? And that's why Red Hat has been so successful, that it's been able to, you know, be a billion-dollar company with very little IP, you know, at all. It's just managing the environment. And that is, I think, the world that we're heading to in the future, de facto. And proprietary software is kind of becoming a thing of the past.
Okay. That's very, very interesting. So to navigate this open source, like multi-tool solution set of the future, what are partners doing to do that, Dan?
Well, I think they're trying to find partners are also looking. Yeah. When you think of partnership, you know, there's, it's two ways, right? You think of the partner that wants to develop a industry specific solution, but they're also tapping that partner for those frameworks and open source models to be able to, for them to facilitate that vertical solution. So it is definitely a team approach, right? You know, you can't be everything to everybody. You can't be the best at open source software, but it's the encouragement of allowing people to play in that development for their solution. So partners have to get educated on it. It's rather overwhelming, you know, because they're again trying to mine the store and look at new things in the future and develop kind of ROI models or commercialization success on those things. So it's you have to have this ever never-ending curiosity to learn and want to develop yourself as an organization with these new technologies. That's the best advice I can have, is just always to remain curious, you know?
Yeah, I agree completely. I think learning anything it's a fundamental part of learning, isn't it? And especially if you're enjoying yourself. I mean, it's very interesting now in terms of how things work and like actually how people don't really need that many programming skills anymore. They can just go and just bolt on these things to what they're doing already and don't need to use coding skills in many ways. Is that fair to say?
Well, they're trying to get to that world of like codeless code and drag and drop. The devil's in the details, right? Because there's just always so many nuances and wrinkles and issues and things that are changing. Yeah. So it's a little bit of both, right? It's a mixed bag of yes, there's some programming. Yes, it's codeless code. And that's where that's the promised land. We're not quite there yet, but if you were a small, medium-sized business, you can leverage a lot of these tool sets that are provided by the vendors, such as IBM, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Will get you pretty darn far to where you want to go. And then whether you tap a Red Hat or someone else to kind of augment that as you're going to version 2.0 or 3.0, that organization can figure it out. But they first want to kind of test it in a, you know, non-gigantic investment way, right? Because typically a lot of these places want consultative fees and building it, and you can think of teams of Indian engineers that are with gigantic companies that do this outsourced or IT shops, so to say. And a traditional small, medium-sized business cannot do that, you know. So this is the industry's response to that market segment, I think.
So we're basically... I don't like the word disruption, but we're in a disrupted business world completely these days. And this like need for digital agility is so necessary, right? And what you're saying is that basically we need to just keep learning continually and use the, for want of a better word, the education resources that are provided by the vendors. Is that right?
Yes. And I think you hit the nail on the head. We're talking about digital agility here, right? How do we be able to, you know, change to a very rapidly evolving marketplace, doesn't matter what business you're in, and be able to pivot on that and provide new services or new insights for that company. So it just requires people to be aware, not go back to your traditional biases of what you think it was right and why it was right, because it's moving quickly. As you can see, you know, Amazon's one of the most valuable companies in the world. And at the same time, as we're talking about that size and that gigantic juggernaut, we have, you know, Sears and Roebuck went out of business, right? It was mm-hmm. the traditional, you know, gigantic retailer that I grew up with as a kid.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to pivot to these different things. And like, you can see Walmart, a traditional retailer, has pivoted to more online or e-commerce type solutions for their customers. Mm-hmm. In a variety of ways. So it necessitates having this ability to pivot in those areas. And if it's mostly data driven, if it's mostly software driven, if it's a mobile commerce environment, whether it be enterprise or whether it be industry or consumer, you have to have this environment, like you're saying, that facilitates agility, right? You know, it's like training at the gym. How do we get agile and kind of knowing those things? And being plugged in. So if you don't have a gigantic software team and you're a partner that has leveraged things like Maxima with IBM and work order systems in an industrial environment, you know, you'll want to look to IBM's subject matter expertise as it relates to cloud environments for these hybrid solutions that are the market is demanding. You're going to want to look at maybe vertical expertise in things like machine learning or neural networks or edge processing. There's all these different things, but you have to know what tools to choose from, and you have to know that you have access to them, right? This is the first thing, is people have to know that these things are available, and can they start playing with them?
Right. I mean, I don't think people know actually that there are so many different options right now. I think we're at a point where you have to hire someone to tell you what would be of interest for you, you know? And like in terms of like these developer tools with like starter kits and stuff like that, like what sort of starter kit, you know, would be the best kind of kit that you sort of mentioned here in your article for like DevOps and stuff like that?
Well, I think the right starter kit is a lot of these. If you're the right partner and you're looking to migrate some of these workloads, is to migrate some of these functions in a safe sandbox in a cloud. So there's a lot of easy ways to get started, and you know, IBM is offering $12,000 of, you know, free cloud credits to get started for the right partners.
Yep.
And starting to look around the tool sets around the cloud. And I'll give you an example, right? We have an industrial IoT solution. It's monitoring various kind of spectrums of data in both ultrasonic and vibration, and to understand when a rotating machine, roller element bearings, so think pumps, fans, motors, and compressors, and it would force out an alert. So you start getting that kind of hardware connected, and it starts having all these alerts. Mm-hmm. And they start becoming a nuisance, right? It's kind of like your email nudges. Just imagine hundreds of them a day. Would you like to do this? Would you like to do that? Start finding out that, okay, we have an alert, we've covered our butt, we told them what the problem is, but that's not really integrating into workflow. And what we did is we took a serverless function, and basically what that means is, if this alert, tell it to do this, and then API integrate it into their older systems that are spit out a work order, okay? Mm-hmm. And that way, we're eliminating the judgment call by the human, you know, because they got a million things. They're already taxed. We can't expect regular field engineers to be looking and pondering over, you know, machine learning data and visualization. They're too busy. They're already taxed. We've already in the manufacturing environment, we've grinded this down. It's so lean that, you know, some of these jobs should be done by two or three people, and we're trying to give them more data to do their job better. Mm-hmm. So some of these simplistic tools are very, very meaningful, such as any of these API integrations that lets these API is an application programming interface. So it just shares this data between these two systems. And with that creates interoperability and integration at the best way right now. So that we're going to live in this world of APIs and API integration for a long time until some other standard comes along, and it's creating an environment where we can integrate these things and then, you know, thread it through the eye of the needle, so to say, to bring it all the way down to business value. So when I say we integrated our API in the work order system, something spits out in a piece of paper and says, go fix this machine by doing this. Mm-hmm. So instead of alerts and alarms, we're just telling them what to do, and it's already integrated in their workflow. Now, this is a transitionary phase. When we get into this world where there's no more paper and no more older systems, everything's new, that's fine. But we got another 20 years to kind of transition to this mega digital environment, for lack of a better word.
Yep.
And that, you know, that serverless function that I did with some of these industrial IoT experts and data scientists, as basic as it may sound, it was really like cutting edge in a way for these industrial guys who've been in plants and these kind of environments for decades to go, wow, now we've kind of closed this, you know, we're almost closing the entire feedback loop, you know, in the sense that it's going all the way to the corrective action and hopefully get that behavioral change. And then when you start seeing the results, you'll get a 360 degree view of what's working and what's not working. And what does that tell you? That'll tell you, like, do you need that many pumps? Do you need that much redundancy? Can you do more with less? Are you just going to throw labor at every single problem? You're just going to double up the labor as your business case grows? Or is there ways to kind of digitally kind of be aware of what's happening and dispatch people accordingly to where the needs are the highest, right? And rank them. It requires a lot of data. It requires a lot of information, but we have to funnel that data in an appropriate place such that it can be digested. You know, the promise and the allure of technology is great, but we also have to be able to absorb what it's provided to us, right? It's that's the other thing. You and I can just tell on our daily basis, just with podcasts, like there's so much going on. There's so much information and new ways to kind of communicate and do things with each other. It's hard to keep up. So you got to be able to digest it and put it in your daily life, you know, to make it really meaningful. So there is very easy to use tools out there. It just necessitates that the subject matter expert, whoever that, or that vertical industry leader has to, you know, has to think about the problem and has to, you know, mold these technology solutions into their world.
Right, I get you. So what we're really talking about then is actually having the right culture of innovation for the first thing, and then we're actually talking about sandboxing ideas within departments, yeah, based upon the requirements within that department. So if it was like a production orientated business, you would have different production managers, wouldn't you, for different parts of that chain, right, of the production line. So is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. Yeah, that is fair to say.
Yeah. So then it really goes back down to the culture of innovation, the inherent culture within the business, and actually talking to the people who are on the ground and saying, well, you know, what could we automate that's going to make your job better, that's going to make your job easier, that's going to help you? I mean, I think, you know, there are so many ways that we can do this. It's almost like, well, actually, you know, where do we start within the business?
Yeah, and a lot of people, I'm seeing what I'm starting to witness, I don't know if I can articulate it properly, is more of a focus on the process or process optimization as opposed to the endpoint. So it's not just machine learning with the killer algorithm that gives you this holy grail of a data point or insight. It's kind of like, can I automate chunks of the process that makes much more easy or for humans to do things that they should be working on as opposed to mundane, you know, data reading, you know, reading things, digesting things. If they're all routine, if you think of a chatbot, I want to do a return. Okay, return. Why do you want to return it? You can do this in an industrial environment as well, right? You can think of the same kind of rules-based decision engine that can help these things. And what we're really trying to say is, is there a place, you know, we should be effectively spending our time rather than just, you know, manning the shop? You know, if you go to some of these industrial environments with all these pumps and systems and stuff like that, you're going to see like there's just guys sitting around like just thinking something breaks. Well, okay, let's say it grows because we want the business to grow. You're going to just add more guys just sitting around looking at these things? Or can we, you know, almost be digitally connected such that you dispatch them again? I'm kind of saying the same thing again, but where they should be focused on as opposed to idleness, right? Because everybody's trying to keep their costs down. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think you're completely right there. I mean, if you think about just like the wine industry as one example, you know, you put your filter sheets in the filter, you wrap it up so it's tight, you create your airlock, and then you pump the wine through the filter, right? And and you know, you've done all the work. What's the winemaker doing? What's the guy doing? He's just sitting there waiting for the filter to go through. So what does he do with his time? It's like more strategic work could be actually done if you could automate that process. Once you've checked it all and you've made sure that it's all washed through, it's all clean, and then you steam it and then you run the wine through, right? You can easily automate a lot of that process. So once the wine has actually gone through the filter and you've got some air coming in, you know that you've run out of wine from the other end, right? So you can have an automation that switches the pump off, right?
Right. That's exactly right. So, I mean, again, my interest has been focused on these little, maybe you can call them single digit percentage gains by automating certain parts of the process. It's not all going to be automated, every single thing of everything, right? But can we automate certain aspects of it? And then you're getting these percentage gains. And if you think about that from a time perspective, a money perspective, labor utilization perspective, you start adding up 5% here, 7% here, 12% here, it starts to get to be meaningful. So it's looking at the desired end state, and you're looking for that machine learning algorithm and all these like AI and all this stuff, but also there's just a lot of tools. And that's what the cloud environment allows us to do, is kind of, you know, take those workloads and kind of look at ways in which we can optimize that stack. And, it's very exciting. I would encourage people that are kind of in traditional industries to look at these things, get boned up, because the solution providers, the vendors, are very much interested in hearing what they have to say to customize their solutions and make it their own. So it's a win-win for everyone. And we're trying to evangelize what's going on here. And I would just encourage them to take a look around, not be intimidated by it, and try it in a safe environment. You'll be surprised by the results.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think it's very exciting to think that actually, you know, what we can use for security purposes, just as one example, if you think about the security threats that, you know, a router, for example, might have extra traffic coming through there, you can use some kind of AI-powered solution to check that out, right? And like you were saying, with the Internet of Things, having sensors on, for example, the motors in airplanes, for example, they use sensors on those, don't they, to work out if the airplane needs a service, right? Or if there's something wrong with the motor. So it's making things a lot safer, isn't it, for everyday people, right?
I think so. I think it's making it safer. I think it's making it better. This is means that, you know, the world's changing, and but always, you know, jobs have shifted and changed. You know, we're not picking fruits and vegetables with our hands for the most part. You know, we're using machines. You know, we're taking, you know, we don't use the horse and buggy anymore. We're using, you know, tractors and soon to be automated tractors and automated, you know, irrigation systems. So, it's just knowing how to change it and better serve your customer and ultimately, you know, make the company and your customers very happy with it.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think the capabilities of actually feeding more people for less money are there now. I mean, just as an example, I watched a program about tomato growing in the United Kingdom, and this gentleman, he's actually worked out how to grow tomatoes to such an extent that they are the sweetest tasting tomatoes that you could ever possibly get. And he's done that by working out how to stress them to the point of producing just the right tomatoes, giving them just the right amount of water and nutrients, and no more than that. So it's going to save so much resource. I think I heard that there's some kind of like 15%, they're going to save 15% of costs for food production is what I heard.
Well, that's tremendous, right? In a resource-constrained world of water, you know, feeding more people on the planet, like you said, that's amazing. That's groundbreaking.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So I think any business can utilize this, right? And all they really need to do is literally just check out, you know, if they're into DevOps or they've got a DevOps or a tech company they work with, they can get these $12,000 of credits, right? Just by clicking the link. Yeah.
That's absolutely right. And and start exploring these tools and start having brainstorming sessions on what could be done.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there's definitely areas to put up in the cloud, to digitize certain workloads, to have access to this information instead of being on site. It'll be very helpful for visibility, transparency, data-driven decision-making. And it's just the way of the future.
But also they're going to be saving capital investment costs as well, aren't they? Because they don't need to actually reinvest and invest in servers that are in-house, right? So they can just scale as the business grows.
Yes, it is. It's kind of like elastic compute. You know, it scales to according to the data storage and kind of computing power you need.
Yeah.
You have to keep your eye on it because it grows so fast. Bills are higher than they expect them to be in the cloud. So
Can be.
You have to be aware of it, and you have to know how to mutate and augment it, which is all these different solutions that are coming out and tool sets to be able to kind of manage those things. But again, we're looking at this new world and how to participate and be agile in the new world. And that's kind of the cost of doing business now. It's kind of table stakes.
Yeah. 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 I hear that a lot, actually. I mean, you either jump on board and really go for it, or you're basically just going to be left behind, aren't you, really? And you know, the chances of being acquired as well are lower with businesses that aren't keeping up, because the technology and the speed at which their competition can be ahead is just too much for them, some of these people, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Good point.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dan. It's been really, really interesting, and I do really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Nate. It's always a pleasure.
Cheers.
Cheers.
IBM has made available to the developer community an offer with $12,000 of cloud credits. And you can find that at influentialvisions.com/IBM cloud credits. Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.